have a very strong memory of time as a child playing Lego. Like, I did a lot, but I have one particular memory when I was, I don't know, probably about 9, and I was trying to build a windmill. And for whatever reason, this time, I was struggling. I couldn't make what I wanted. Like, maybe it's because just didn't have the pieces that were right to build my design. Maybe I was just trying to stretch them too far, and you know how Lego, it's just like try and push too far and it clicks out, and it kept doing that. And it, no matter what I tried, I couldn't do what I wanted. I couldn't get to the windmill that I was planning in my mind. And so, as a 9-year-old, probably old enough to know better, eventually snapped, meltdown. I was frustrated, so I did what I knew how to do and yelled and jumped up and down on my bed until it snapped. It does happen. My parents were right. Don't jump on your bed because it'll break. And it did. Now, that's as a kid. You get frustrated by something and your world falls apart. But as adults, often we're not much different, are we? Things go wrong in life. Our plans don't come to fruition. Whether it's when you make a recipe and you follow the plans exactly and it doesn't turn out like the one in the book. And you feel like ripping Jamie's face off the front cover and throwing it in the bin as he smiles at you. Or you've got an important meeting, important appointment, and every traffic light conspires against you. And you're frustrated. And the little things, it's often so often the little things, isn't it, that we face every single day. Little frustrations. And the things we plan don't turn out the way we want. It's frustrating. And maybe we don't jump up and down on our bed. Or maybe you do. I don't. But sometimes the same kind of things are happening in my mind and I'm just better at controlling my physical body. But there's still that exasperation, feeling the futility of it. We know the saying, don't we? The best laid plans of mice and men often go astray. That's such a common part of our experience. As much as we try and plan things, ultimately we're not always in control. We can't ensure that our plans come about. It's part of life. Well, today, as we look at Isaiah chapter 23 together, now we are working through this section of Isaiah, and we started last week from chapter 13. And this whole section of chapter 13 to 23 is about judgment. Isaiah is proclaiming judgment from God on different nations. It started with Babylon, the kind of the powerhouse of the East. And now it finishes appropriately with Tyre, which was a kind of powerhouse of the West. If you follow along on the map, you can see here, this is where the places are. Babylon's way out east. Tyre is a town, a city, on the Mediterranean coast, just a little bit above Israel. It's in an area called Phoenicia. And it's kind of got a sister city called Sidon, just up the road. And Tyre itself is actually, although it looks like it's on the coast, it's actually on an island. It's very, very close to shore, but it's on an island. And this gave it a special kind of security. They didn't have anywhere that kind of the armies could rock up with their siege works and kind of attack the city in the normal ways. They were protected by ocean all around. And it gave them a great, great sense of security in them. But the main thing about Tyre is that it's a port. It's a harbour. From there, ships sailed out throughout all the Mediterranean and even beyond. And traded. It was a merchant city that did business throughout the world. And through that, they became very rich. Now we're going to explore a little bit about this prophecy against Tyre. But as we do, it's actually really helpful for us today. And it's a prophecy against Tyre, against this city, town, nation that was in existence thousands of years ago. And yet, this prophecy was written down in Israel's scriptures, in the Old Testament. The word's actually for God's people. And most appropriately, they are for God's people on whom the fulfillment of the ages have come. Us, Christians. Okay, so even though it's a prophecy against Tyre, it's helpful for us as we stand here thousands of years later to read and reflect. And as we do it today, I'm hopeful that we'll be able to see how our plans and our frustrated plans relate to God's plan a little bit more clearly. But we're going to see it in three steps. One, the punishment of a proud nation. Two, the pursuits of the prostitute. And three, the plan of the potentate. Okay. So, number one, the punishment of a proud nation. This is how the prophecy starts. Read with me in verse 1. A prophecy against Tyre. Wail, you ships of Tarshish, for Tyre is destroyed and left without house or harbor. Destruction is coming on Tyre. That's what this prophecy is about. Destruction. It's mentioned in lots of different ways here. Destruction is coming. The house, the harbor, it's going. But mainly it's portrayed through Tyre's trading partners and the other cities around the world as they reflect on the fact that this important harbor to them that they depended on for their trade has been destroyed. And so we get the refrain, wail, you ships of Tarshish. Wail, you people of the island, in verse 7. It's where it referred to Cyprus. They have heard news of the downfall of Tyre. Now, there's different places around the world. Tarshish is probably a settlement that actually was established out of Tyre in Spain. And so it's picturing the great fall of the city. All their trade, all their economy, everything that they were building towards, the great name that they had established throughout the world as this kind of marketplace of the nations, as it's described in verse 3, all of that is coming undone. Because verse 11, the Lord has stretched out his hand over the sea and made its kingdoms tremble. He's given an order concerning Phoenicia that her fortresses be destroyed. He said, no more of your reveling, virgin daughter Sidon, now crushed. It's gone. Fallen. And as we read through and we get this picture of the downfall of Tyre, we're also getting a picture of just how high she was, how well regarded. Did you notice that as we read through before? It's a picture of not just a city falling, but a city falling from a great height, a prosperous city, one that has splendor, verse 9 describes, one that was renowned on the earth, a city in verse 8 who bestowed crowns, whose merchants are princes, whose traders are renowned on all the earth. This is the kind of the city that can make and break people. It's the one that can raise people up from just being businessmen to being rulers, giving them the crown of authority. It's the nation that it's the nation that sent people to establish towns and settlements in far-off lands, verse 7. It's done great things. It's had great success, great prosperity. And the more that we see the glory of Tyre, the more it emphasizes how devastating the fall is. The bigger they are, the harder they fall. It's not just a random act, though, is it? This kind of nation that had success, kind of just turning of the tide, so now it's going to experience the bottom rung. We're told in verse 9 that the Lord has brought her down because of her pride. See, verse 9, the Lord Almighty planned it to bring down her pride in all her splendor, to humble all who are renowned on the earth. Success is great. Prosperity of this nation. But when it gets to their head, when the attitude of their hearts finds self-sufficiency, finds identity and meaning and purpose aside from God, that's pride. And that's a problem. And that's one that God steps in to address. The proud are brought low. Sometimes we experience this day to day, don't we? We see that, and it's kind of refreshing when you see the proud brought low. It's something we like about it. It's a bit like the kind of the wake-up call, the GFC. All these people that put so much hope and dreams into the stock market. Suddenly, it's just something that shows how fickle that is, how unworthy it is of trust. Small changes bring about big consequences. Well, how does Tyre respond to this punishment? Well, we see it in verse 15 and 16. The song of the prostitute. At that time, Tyre will be forgotten for 70 years, the span of a king's life. But at the end of those 70 years, it will happen to Tyre as in the song of the prostitute. Take up a harp, walk through the city, you forgotten prostitute. Play the harp well, sing many a song so that you'll be remembered. Now, reduced to a shadow of what she once was, shamed and forgotten, Tyre presses on. She doesn't give up. This is not her end. And the image we get is, it's kind of awkward one, isn't it? This picture of a prostitute who's maybe past her prime and has been neglected and forgotten, but is still determined to stick at her game, seeking to regain her reputation, her renown, to be remembered. This is Tyre. Although she has been humiliated, she won't quit. But she continues to do what she knows how to do. She continues to try and build up trade with the nations on earth, to build meaning and a name for herself. And at first glance, it kind of looks like she hasn't learned anything, doesn't it? There's been no progress through her destruction, through her judgment that God has brought on her. But it goes on. And as we look at the last two verses, it's here that we get a glimpse of God at work, of the plan of the potentate. Now, you can tell that I was really struggling for P words here, so I had to resort to one that is a bit out of our normal way of talking. Potentate, it's a word that means the one who's in power, the powerful one. And here, using it to refer to God, the one who's ultimately in power, the one who's ultimately able to bring about his plans. God is unlike us, isn't he? None of his plans are frustrating. There's nothing that doesn't turn out the way he wants. Did you notice that as we read through? In verse 8 and 9, Isaiah asked this question about the destruction of Tyre. He says, who planned this? Where did it come from? Tyre didn't plan it that way. It wasn't her design. The answer in verse 9 is, the Lord Almighty planned it. God planned the destruction of Tyre. Now, this is something we sometimes struggle with. It's difficult for people to get their heads around. But it's clear in the Bible, and it's important. God plans things like cities being destroyed. God's plan includes things like political unrest, economic collapse, wars, nations emerging, nations being forgotten, natural disasters, sickness, death. These things that we find difficult and painful in life, that we find frightening and confusing. These things are not outside God's plan. But as we see God planning this, as we see in Isaiah 23, God's plan that includes destruction, we also get another key about the way God plans things. We see that God's plans are always for good. But even though he includes things like the destruction of a city in his plan, he always is working for good. Have a look at those last two verses with me. Verses 17 and 18. It says, at the end of 70 years, the Lord will deal with Tyre. She'll return to her lucrative prostitution and will ply her trade with all the kingdoms on the face of the earth. Not much has changed, it seems. Then read on. Yet her profit and her earnings will be set apart for the Lord. They'll not be stored up or hoarded. Her profits will go to those who live before the Lord for abundant food and fine clothes. Here, Isaiah is picturing a change that is brought about with the Lord's judgment. A good change. It's in some ways, it's small, isn't it? This nation of Tyre is still kind of going about her lucrative prostitution. It's not an endorsement of what she does. But it's showing how the Lord, just a glimpse of how he's bringing good about through. You see, a change has gone on where Tyre's riches and her profits are not simply hoarded, but are brought as tribute to the Lord. They're brought to contribute to those who live before the Lord for abundant food and fine clothes. In Isaiah's day, it's talking about providing for the needs of those who run the temple in Jerusalem, for the Levites. Here, Tyre, this foreign nation who doesn't follow God, through God's plans, he's bringing out of it what he needs for his people. Now, there's these two realities. God's in control every moment. And God is always working for good. It's sometimes when we sit in our life and there's things that are going on, sometimes it's hard for us to see how those things go together, isn't it? There's things that we wish were different. We wish God's plan didn't include the destruction of a city. And sometimes we look at it and we see, how can this be for good? That's our position as humans. We don't always get to see how the difficult things get worked out for good. I mean, look, in this case, 70 years has gone on of Tyre being forgotten. That's a lifetime. The lifetime of a king, the one who's going to live longest. The most people on the ground, they don't get to see the turnaround at the end. Most of the time, we don't get to see how the frustrating and difficult things of our life get used for good. Sometimes there'll be things that we see God do out of difficulty. But in my experience, that's always the exception when we see how it connects. Now, our great hope is that one day we will see how it fits together. But in the meantime, we trust, don't we? We trust a God that we know is in control and we know is good. And that is exactly the example that Jesus has set for us, isn't it? That's the two things he's holding together when he prays in the garden. Father, not my will, but yours be done. As he faces the agony of the cross, and his will doesn't want to face it. He doesn't want to go through with it. And yet he trusts the Father's plan. He trusts what God is doing is for good. Now, that's the best laid plan, isn't it? God's plan. Our plans often go astray. There's obstacles that come up. There's things that we don't account for. Other people get in the way. But God plans perfectly. His plans are never frustrated. And his ultimate plan, he's putting into effect through what Jesus has done on the cross. We get a glimpse of it in the garden. But we get more explanation in hindsight in Acts chapter 2. Peter is delivering the first Christian sermon. And he's explaining, our fellow Israelites, listen to this. Jesus of Nazareth was a man accredited by God to you by miracles, wonders, and signs which God did among you through him, as you yourselves know. This man was handed over to you by God's deliberate plan and foreknowledge, and you with the help of wicked men put him to death by nailing him to the cross. But God raised him from the dead, freeing him from the agony of death, because it was impossible for death to keep its hold on him. Jesus went to the cross. He faced horrific suffering. As part of God's deliberate plan. And we are familiar with how good it is, aren't we? That's what brings us here to rejoice as we sing together in praise of our God for all the good that he has done through Jesus on the cross. Paying the penalty for our sin. In adopting us into his family, freeing us from the slavery to fear, worldly living, bringing us into fellowship with one another. And even we who sing about it and are excited about it week after week, we don't fully comprehend how good it is, do we? That's still yet to come. We'll continue singing and rejoicing in it in eternity. Well, I want to come back to where we began. The frustrations that trip us up in everyday life. Now, so often, the frustrations is not the biggest things, is it? So often when we get faced with big things that go wrong, we're forced to take a bigger perspective. But it's the little things that catch us out so often. When our anger is triggered, resentment, and our lack of self-control shows through. When we build up all our hopes in these small plans that come undone. And you know when we do that? When we are frustrated in that moment because a little plan has fallen apart, it shows that we are holding that too tightly. And it's a sign of our pride. It's a sign that we are clinging too close to ourselves and what we are able to accomplish. We are holding too tightly to our plans that we know are going to be frustrated. And it ought to be a reminder to hold more firmly to God's plan that we know is good, that we know will not be frustrated. I want to finish with a couple of verses from James. We're not up to it yet, but we'll read it in a couple of weeks at church. In chapter 4, where James writes to the Christians, "Now listen, you who say, today or tomorrow, we'll go to this or that city, spend a year there, carry on business and make money. Instead, you ought to say, if it's the Lord's will, we'll live and do this or that. As it is, you boast in your arrogant schemes. All such boasting is evil." Let me pray for us. Sovereign Lord, thank you that in reading Isaiah 23, we're reminded that you are the God who is in control, the God who plans, the God who brings about what you have purposed. Thank you that we're also reminded that you are the God who works all things for good. Father, please help us to cling tightly to these truths, that our hope may ultimately be in your plan. And Father, please especially help us to have humility as our own plans are frustrated. Day after day, the things that we would like don't come to fruition. Help us to have the humility to hold our plans loosely, but to grasp firmly to your plan. As we know the good that you are working out for us, that you have set in Jesus, you've brought about through his death and resurrection, and are bringing out in full. We look forward to the completion of when he returns. Father, we pray this in Jesus' great name.